Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Granddad Business with Aaron Caliber.
That's my dad.
Hello!
Underpants?
That is hilarious.
Shush your mouth, dude. Rate and review this podcast or my daddy will go into a deep depression.
Granddad Business with Aaron Caliber.
Yeah.
Boom. Welcome to Grown Dad Business. This is Aaron Caliber. I'm sitting at the beautiful hotel in Bloomington, Indiana during the Limestone Comedy Festival. And I have a pretty awesome guest today. And I'm not going to tell you. Well, you already know because it's written on the podcast title. But I just want to give a shout out real quick to my sponsor, goodsandevil.com. You guys, look, I pimp it enough. It's awesome t-shirts, horror shirts, movie shirts, original designs. And if you're into veganisms, if you're a vegan, they also do a line of vegan shirts, which is pretty rad. I eat meat, but I still think their shirts are pretty rad. They're pretty rad. So go to goodsandevil.com. You can get 10% off any order with the coupon code GROWNUP. GROWNUP, one word. Goodsandevil.com. Check that out. And if you want to see me live, I'm all over the place this summer. Go check it out, AaronCaliber.com. I'm in Oklahoma City. I'm back in Little Rock. Yeah, I'm doing the little Midwest Plains tour or whatever. Let's get into it. My guest today is a mom. I got a mom, guys. I got one. She's a mother of 100. I still haven't figured it out. You might have heard her. She's a fellow Doug Loves Movies alum. She's toured all over the country. Very funny. I met her at the Pittsburgh Comedy Festival last year. It's Emma Arnold.
Hi.
Emma, thank you so much. I was really excited that you were here because I always use like festivals to like grab a bunch of people to be guests on my podcast. And I was like, she has like 100 kids. I gotta talk to her.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm perfect for Grown Dad Business.
I know, right? It's exciting. But so you, and I also love that you're on Doug Loves Movies. People love that.
Yeah, my kids were just on too, so it's kind of
perfect. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, and next time Doug is in Pittsburgh, I gotta bring my 5-year-old son on.
Yeah.
Because he has done actually, he's my 5-year-old son, which I call Luke the Nuke.
Mm-hmm.
All my kids have like hashtag and one names, you know, like and one basketball.
Yeah.
I have Luke the Nuke is my 5-year-old. My daughter, 7, is Becca the Professor because she's a smarty pants.
Nice.
And then the little one, she's 1 and she's Lil Fire Cat.
Aww.
Yeah. Now all the sounds are happening. Yeah, that's all right. We have all microphones to our faces.
That's fine. Yeah.
But you're a traveling comedian, and should I say, like, how do you do that?
Yeah.
We were just talking about that.
You're a mom. You're not supposed to leave.
Why aren't you in the kitchen making cookies for the Girl Scout troop?
It's fine for Jim Gaffigan to do comedy, but you're a mom.
I know.
Yeah.
So how many kids, explain the kid situation. How many kids do you have?
So I have 6 kids.
That's so crazy.
That's a lot of kid.
That makes my heart like palpitate.
Yeah. It's a lot of kid. I have 3 and then I have 3 stepkids also. So I have 3 boys and then I have 2 stepdaughters and a stepson.
What are the ages of these children?
They are 8, 11, 11, 13, 13, and 16.
Shoot me multiple times in this cranium.
The best is when we first got together, like when we first moved in together, I was like, we should have a baby. And my boyfriend was like, fuck you.
Yeah, are you out of your mind?
I was like, it's just, you know, it's totally was hormonal. Like, I was like, I want to make a baby with you. Let's do this. And he was like, we have a minivan right now. If we have one more baby, you have to upgrade
to a church van.
The church van. And he was like, that's a commit. Like, you are a crazy person at that. You have a family so large, you have a church van.
And also, this is coming from the comedian who tours around the country and all the kids are at home with him. Like, let's have a baby so let's I can tour baby. The Midwest.
Yeah, exactly. I know. That's what he was like. No. He told me, actually, we made a deal because I was really like sad that we couldn't have a baby. Like genuinely like, because, okay, I mean, I'm not going to talk shit, but like I had a baby with somebody who wasn't around. I had kids with someone who wasn't around a whole lot.
Sure.
And wasn't that involved. And now that when I got together with him, I was like, I want to have a baby with you. Like, you're great. You're super into this. And I want to have a baby with someone. Like, I want to do this.
It's a symbol of love.
Yeah. Like, let's make a person. And he was like, it would kill me. It would literally kill me to have another kid. But he said, if I made $3 million in 3 years, we could have a baby.
So now, it sounds like you need to get a reality show.
Yeah. So if I still have some time left. If I like really, I'm like 30,000 in. That's not, you know, I could probably.
Yeah.
I got a little ways to go to 3 million. But
yeah, you know, play it all in craps in Reno.
No, actually, like a year later, I was like, thank you so much for not getting me pregnant.
Yeah,
oh my God.
That's a bad idea.
I don't want to be pregnant. It was just absolutely hormones. I don't want a baby.
That's hilarious.
Six kids is so much more even than I thought it was going to be. It was like, oh, this was a lot. And already I had a high expectation for how hard it would be, and it's way more than that.
Yeah, oh my God. Like, I, you know, I talk about my three kids and complain about that and, you know, talk about it on this podcast, but six is, how many does Gaffigan have?
Five.
Five, so.
Fucking quitter.
Hey, you didn't, but you only had
his.
Three.
They're all his. Yeah.
Only three ruined
I
your
did.
Body.
Yeah,
so.
I only had three. After that third, too, like, my last kid was, like, a barbed wire broken glass baby. Like,
oh
most painful labor. Like, I had natural labors, like, total hippie home birth shit. In a clinic, not, like, at my house. But after that
style.
One, I was like, I'm never fucking doing this again.
Yeah.
But then.
I'm going to give a shout out to one of my, it's a Pittsburgh comic. She's a mother of three. One of my favorite jokes about having three kids. She says she has three kids. I'm just telling you because you might appreciate it. Because my wife likes this joke. She has three kids and she's like, she dresses like, you know, in leather and like sexy, you know, and she got fit again. And she's like, you know, I had three kids and she's like, you know I look like this, but she's like, you have no idea what's underneath this Wizard of Oz curtain. Like, it's so funny. She's like, you don't want to see what's underneath this. Like,
that's so
this
funny.
I
look great. Like, I look great. I'm not even kidding. Like, after three kids, I look great. And I always tell people that my tramp stamp did way more damage to my body than childbirth did. Like,
my, you know, and I always shout out my wife. Like, my wife's had three kids. She's running a marathon tomorrow.
Jesus.
Like, she is.
All right, well, I don't look marathon great.
Well, my wife is a sexy beast, and I will tout it all day. And it's awesome.
I look great for a road comic, you know?
Yeah, a road comic that has birthed three children.
I look fantastic.
You're doing all right.
That.
Yeah. So how long have you been doing comedy?
Okay, well, this always pisses people off, but 4 years.
I've been there.
Yeah, and people are always like, what?
I'm almost in 7 years. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been in 4 years. I started in storytelling before that. So, you know, I wasn't like brand new when I started.
Right.
And I took a pretty long break that first year. Like, I was kind of really doing it pretty light. So, but I've been a writer for like 15 years.
Yeah.
And I've written a ton of shit.
Yeah, so, you're an author.
Yeah. So like when I started comedy, I kind of already had like a lot of the voice stuff down and I had so much material.
You knew how to express yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
So, and I had been teaching workshops. I used to teach storytelling workshops like all over the country. So I had a lot of like experience with crowds and stuff. Like I did
and
a lot of
shit. And that's interesting because I tell people the same thing where, you know, you get some cool things early on in your stand-up career and people are like, what the like how? And I was like, well, you know, before I started doing stand-up was the last thing in entertainment that I did.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing improv and sketch for 12 years. I was already an actor with credits.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so when I did stand up, it was like, okay, well, I'm in Pittsburgh. We're having babies. I'm not moving to New York or LA or Chicago to be on Saturday Night Live.
Mm-hmm.
So what can I do here? Oh, I'll try stand up.
Yeah.
And that worked.
Yeah.
Then they start giving you money for complaining about your kids.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm going to keep doing this. So, yeah, no, like, it's interesting you have that background. And that's usually the case. So, you know, people have done, like, filmmaking or, you know, improv or something.
Yeah, I always wanted to do it. I was a huge fan of it. Like, I had been listening to stand-up since I was really little. Like, we weren't allowed to watch TV. We were very sheltered.
Right.
But my stepdad gave me a bunch of Richard Pryor albums when I was, like, nine.
Oh,
and George Carlin was like, don't show these to your mom, but this shit's amazing.
Yeah.
And, like, he introduced me to Monty Python and shit. So I was always a huge fan of comedy.
Yeah.
But I always was very intimidated by it. Like, I was like, oh, this is so... Like, I would go and watch it and be like, oh, this is impossible. I could never do that.
Right.
And then I, 4 years ago, went to my first open mic to go watch my boyfriend, actually.
Yeah.
And we weren't dating at the time. We were just friends. And I went to go watch him and was like, oh... This, I could do this.
Yeah.
For sure I could do this, at least, you know, like.
Did you start, now, when you were, before that, when you're writing, did you write about your kids and?
Yeah, yeah. And I had a really, this is dumb, but I was like a popular MySpace blogger, like back when that was a thing, you know, like when they first came out and people started blogging. And then I had a really popular blog for a long time. And so I was already writing things in like 300 to 500 word chunks that were stand-up acts that I just didn't realize were stand-up acts.
Right.
So I already had, when I went to like start, I already had probably like 20 hours of material just going through back blogs and going
through. Great.
And I had written a couple, like I've written like 5 books, most all of them garbage.
but people can still see those and
read
anything you wrote?
No, absolutely not. Go to hell.
Well, what about your funny blogs and stuff?
Oh, you can read my blog. Yeah. Read my blog.
It's just EmmaArnold.com?
EmmaArnoldComedy.com.
Okay.
Yeah. Unfortunately, if you Google me, it's like Emma Arnold, Emma Arnold Comedy, Emma Arnold Holocaust is the third thing that comes up because there's another famous Emma Arnold who survived the Holocaust and is a writer and writes about the Holocaust.
I was just going to make a dirty joke.
Nope, just the Holocaust. So, that's why I've had to add comedy because EmmaArnold.com takes you to a Holocaust survivor website.
I have no problem with Aaron Kleiber.
No, nobody's...
Not at all.
Nobody's Holocausting that.
I mean, I don't know. Kleiber, that name, unfortunately, or fortunately... Fortunately, he was not involved in the Holocaust.
No, yeah.
My great-grandparents were gone way before that.
Yeah.
Peace out.
Yeah, I am currently writing a book. It was supposed to be done this spring, but I've been touring so much that it's not finished yet. But this one's going to be good. Very good.
I want to say hi to Jeff Tate.
Jeff Tate's
walking around.
Hello. You just got to come in and be on this podcast, don't you?
I didn't realize you guys were out here.
it's so nice out that we thought we'd come out. Here, say hi.
It is particularly nice. I like it when the air, when you can feel it, when it's like...
Oh, yeah.
Like you can hold it.
Like you can take it with your hand, like it's Cool Whip,
yeah.
And then splash your face.
I'm going to try to catch the end of Jordan's set so that when he's done, I'll be like, great set. I really like that. And then I can reference whatever the last joke that I heard was. Yeah.
Eventually...
Say Emma was here. She had to leave, but she thought you were great.
Emma saw the last joke, whatever that was.
Include me, too.
Yeah.
Eventually, I'm going to have Jeff Tate on the podcast and talk about what in his childhood made him the way he is.
Oh, it's so good. so good.
Because, you know, it's a special type of person that walks around in a sleeveless jean jacket.
With a sleeveless flannel and a sleeveless t-shirt under that.
And a hat that has his name on it.
Yeah.
That's a special childhood.
Yeah.
That we'll dig into.
Yeah.
And you toured with Jeff Tate.
Yeah. We've been touring together since September. We actually met... last night was our friendiversary. We met here at Limestone last year. And
that's an odd pairing.
It is.
If anybody knows Jeff Tate, you also know if Jeff Tate. This is a little Doug Loves Movies Club.
Yeah.
But like, if you know Jeff and then you're listening to Emma, you're like, wait, how does that? But that makes great comedy shows.
Yeah. No, we have a good rhythm for our show because like we complement each other's styles very well.
Yeah.
You know, like I tend to be kind of a little more uptight and like you're going to get like a sort of solid, like by the numbers stuff. I mean, I've loosened up a lot touring with Jeff, and Jeff is more like rambly and wandery.
Right.
But
it's also like I've experienced that too, but it's worldview also.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you know, like I've toured with Doug Benson.
Yeah.
And I've toured with like, I'll think of people completely opposite them, like Steve-O.
Yeah.
But both of them have said like, oh no, you give something to my audience that I can't.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, you know, I don't have kids, like, but my audience has kids and married and I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We, hit it off 'cause when we were here last year, Jeff lived in Idaho as a kid, so we kind of bumped into each other after Doug Loves Movies, and we were talking, and then he was like, oh, I used to live in Idaho, and we're like, oh, we'll talk later. And then later at the after party, you know, we're both in our later 30s, everybody's always so fucking young at a festival, and everybody's doing mushrooms, and everybody's like...
Me walking around all weekend.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm a grown-up.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, I always make the joke. People are like, you can hang out and have some drinks. I'm like, I'm going to go say hi to everybody at the after party and then go back to my hotel room at midnight and fall asleep watching World War II in HD.
Yeah.
That's what I do.
Yeah. We like everybody's doing mushrooms and getting super wild. And we were both like, oh, no, thank you. I'm very tired. So we stood around and talked for a long time and like really hit it off. And we actually were both at the point where we were about to quit comedy. Like when we met, Jeff was like, I'm not a comedian. I'm a bartender.
Yeah. I remember that phase.
Yeah. And we were both just done.
He's a really charming bartender.
Yeah.
A funny bartender.
Yeah, he is. We were both just like, and I told him, I was like, this is my last festival. Like, I'm not doing this anymore.
Yeah.
I'm out. And we like talked about why we didn't want to do comedy. And then we were like, what if we, and then we like started talking about like, what if we started a tour to get to tour together in a way that was not killing us. And so we started doing that, and we've been touring. We tour every other week since September, and it's grueling as fuck, but it's also, I've had more fun this year than I've had such a good time in comedy. Like I actually really love it again, and I'm just having a great time. And yeah, it still breaks my heart and still pisses me off, and it's exhausting, but it's been really different. It's been a different experience with Jeff. So
that's
I appreciate that a lot.
I give you credit because I see a lot of comics do like the DIY fest, like the DIY tours. And Jeff is that guy to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so like I have friends that are doing these DIY tours and I'm like, I'm a grown up. Like I can't do that. Like I need to make sure I know where my money is coming in. And my wife is a stay at home mom.
Yeah.
So I'm doing it.
Yeah.
And so that's like terrifying to me.
Oh yeah. Well, luckily like we're a good team that way. Cause Jeff has more connections than I do.
Right.
Definitely. Cause he's been doing it for like 15 years.
Right.
And he has way more connections than I do, but I'm super fucking organized. I am like Miss Spreadsheet, you know? And so like we would set up the tour and then I would just put it, we would put everything in spreadsheets and be like, okay, this is where the money's coming in. This is how much the flights will cost. And like we worked everything out beforehand.
That sounds like a good marriage. That's kind of how my wife and I are.
it's funny because we've actually talked about how like this is, we're both divorced, Jeff and I. And we're like, this is the healthiest marriage we've ever had. And it's because we're not fucking.
Yeah.
So because like, I think what happens in a relationship is like, you're so invested in someone that when you have conflict and you fight, you're like, I don't know how to fix this. Let's just have sex.
Yeah, yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And so you end up just having sex and being like, let's just not worry about the other shit. But when you're not fucking, you have to be like, oh, I guess we just keep talking.
Yeah.
Until we fix this. And so we've had massive fights on the tour, like massive, massive fights.
Yeah, yeah.
And you just have to finally come around to a resolution and actually, and it's funny because we were just saying how like in a relationship, it really like in a real, like a marriage, it matters who's right and who's wrong. When you get in an argument, it's like, you need to hear me because I'm right. But when you're not fucking each other, it's like, oh, okay. That could be true for both of us. Like, we have a totally different perspective, but that's true for both of us.
And you guys
you
have a business partnership.
Yeah.
And a good business partnership is like a marriage.
Yeah, it is.
It works well together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we have a really good friendship. You know, I feel like Jeff is, you know, probably one of my closest friendships I've had my whole life. And even just in a year, I feel like he's helped, like, I'm not very assertive. Jeff is maybe too assertive.
Oh, yeah, we know.
Yeah, if you know Jeff. And we've kind of helped, like, I've helped mellow him and be like, hey, let's just roll with the punches. Things are good.
This
and he's helped me be like,
I.
No, I want my fucking money. Fuck you. You know, like, we compliment each other.
Yeah.
Our comedy complements each other and our friendship is really complimentary.
That's a good partnership.
And he loves my family. Like, he'll come and stay with us and hang out with the kids. And like, he's like Uncle Jeff. They fucking adore him. And And my boyfriend, like, adores him, too. And is just like, it's cool. It's a really nice thing.
No, that works.
You know? Yeah.
So you started in, and you're still in Boise.
Yeah. I still live in Boise, Idaho. Yeah.
And so how was starting there in comedy? Like, I don't know much
about
Boise.
There wasn't much. No. There's one club there. And when I started, there was like nothing. There was not a lot going on. I started at this mic that was like a weekly mic called the Dog Dick Fuck Around Hour
Come
and a
on.
Half.
Come on.
Which was a real train wreck.
Oh my God.
And there was not a lot going on. Like there was not a ton to do. So I would drive over to Portland every other weekend because my ex has my kids every other weekend. And I was a single mom at
Oregon?
The time. Yeah, to Portland, Oregon.
How far
I'd drive,
is that?
It's like 7 hours. I'd drive for the weekend, go over there, stay with friends, do as much shit as I could get.
Wow.
Come home. So like I kind of consider Portland more like a hometown comedy because Boise just didn't have a ton going on at the time. Well, even now, still not a ton going on. It's a small scene. It's always, it's growing. But yeah, so I think, but I hear people, like people will tell me, oh, I do 5 mics a night and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, for me, I felt like doing less was actually better because it was like really concentrated.
You had to make it count.
Yeah, I had to really make it count. And like, you know, I didn't just go and like spew jokes at the audience. I would go and like be really like, I mean, it was work. It was
work. Really have to like, make this happen.
I would go and like try stuff out and then be like, no, that wasn't it. Yeah. You know, like over and over. So I feel like that kind of actually helped me because I had to be really dedicated. I had to really want it.
Sure. Yeah. That's how I started too, is like when I started stand up, I had a newborn baby.
Yeah.
My first child.
Yeah.
So when I, at that point, and I've said this multiple times, but you know, I like relating, you know, I understand what you mean because I had a newborn baby and I was like thinking about like, I might go all in, like not have a job and be an actor and a comedian. And that really kicks you in the ass to make it work.
Oh yeah. When I first got separated, I used to write erotica. Like that was how, like I supported myself and 3 kids by writing erotica. Because my publisher had kind of been like, hey,
mom, 3 kids writing erotica.
Yeah.
That's how it's done, right?
Yeah. That's what you do. And because my publisher knew I was in a tight spot financially and was just like, hey, you know, people make really good money doing this. So I was doing that, but I hated it. Like it was just so boring and soul sucking and stupid and used up all my creative energy. And so I was like, all right, I'm going to be a comedian. Yeah. Like I'm going to fucking do this. And in hindsight, I have no idea why I thought that was a good idea.
Yeah.
To be like a single mom and be like, I guess I'll be a comedian. That's easy. Yeah. Like, so I did. I just, you know, I was doing freelance copyright writing and stuff. So I had a little flexibility and a little extra money from residuals and shit. And I was kind of able to like be able to like try to do this shit. And but I had to hit it hard because I had 3 fucking kids I had to support. And I was like, if this doesn't work, I'm fucked.
Yeah.
So I just hit it like immediately as hard as I could. And I also, I think I didn't realize until much later in that it was difficult.
Yeah.
Like I just hit it with all like this total Idaho enthusiasm and like a year into comedy showed up in New York and like got booked on all these shows just because I was like, hi, Emma Arnold, comedian, like shaking hands and out there and like super excited and friendly. And nobody could tell that I had just started because I didn't realize you were supposed to be sort of scared.
To act
green and nervous. Like I just was like, I just was like, you got to get out there. This is what you do. And also I was so excited to be there. I was so excited to be doing comedy and so excited to meet everybody that I think people are just kind of over. My friend Seth, who books Sweet in New York, said that he laughs because he booked me on Sweet a year into comedy, which is bananas because it's an amazing show. And he was like, you just overwhelmed me with this Idaho enthusiasm. You just came in shaking hands and was like, oh, she must be a big deal. Put her on the show.
Yeah.
And I think it kind of helped me in a way because I just got on shit and was like, just I didn't realize till later like how lucky I was
to get on
all these amazing shows stuff. Just pure. Yeah, but you know, charm.
I love that too because I always say like it doesn't hurt to ask.
Yeah,
like you just like, hey, I would like to do comedy. And they're like, oh, okay.
Yeah,
like because you're right because there are people that live in New York or LA and you know, they're like, I could never get on that show. Have you ever asked?
Yeah, people can be very limiting. You know, to just assume. I think too, like I have a lot of friends like who are so funny and so amazing, but they're all, and I do this to myself too, where I'm like, oh, now I do it. Where I'm like, oh well, you know, I'm probably not ready for that.
Yeah, now that you start to understand how things work in the business,
Well, and also like. I feel like the harder I work at it, the more self-critical I get.
Absolutely.
The more I'm like, that could have been better. That could have been better. Like when in the beginning, especially since I started in storytelling, where like a silent room is good news.
Yeah.
And so when I first started comedy, like it would be silent and I would get like 10 laughs and I'd be like, oh, I killed it. Like I'm doing great because I didn't realize like you want a ton of laughs. It wasn't until I was like a year or two in that I was kind of like, oh, so you want a bunch of laughs. Okay, I'm understanding. But also I had the luxury of like never being afraid of that silence.
Sure, yeah.
Since I was sort of like, oh, you're supposed to have like attention. Right. As long as people are paying attention, who cares? Right. So I think that has, like I've watched a lot of people like when a crowd is quiet, like people get panicked. And I haven't had that feeling. Right. Because I'm always just like, oh, yeah, they're paying attention. Who cares?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You talk about your kids and things on stage, but you have a unique perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have a son that's autistic, correct?
Yeah, my oldest is autistic.
Because, like, I saw your set yesterday at Limestone. Super funny.
Thank you.
And, you know, I was just talking about a comedian who, like, got picketed for talking about one of their special needs relatives. And
yeah, I think you do have to be careful. I try to
How does that work for you?
Well, one thing, actually...
Well, you also are the mom.
Yes. And so it's not like my cousin I'm making fun of.
Yeah, it's coming from a genuine, loving place.
Yeah.
And everyone knows that.
Actually, Jeff fixed that joke for me.
Huh.
Because he saw me do it a year ago, and it didn't... the joke I do about my son, he was like... It never worked before. I never could get it quite right. And I even told him, I was like, you know, I have this stuff about my autistic kid, but I'd always feel like it just makes the crowd uncomfortable.
Right.
And he said, you need to establish how nuts about him you are first.
Yeah.
And then you can say whatever you want, but people need to know it all comes from a place of love. And it was such good advice.
He's
pretty smart.
I don't want to interject my own life into it, but I do. It's my podcast. I've experienced the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, you know, I talk about marriage and I talk about my wife, and I think sometimes I get mad at myself because I come off as the more angry husband dad.
Yeah.
And the best advice I got was from Louis Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, hey, he goes, you're killing 98% of the audience.
Yeah.
You're doing great. That other 2% are these moms that are between like 30 and 50 who think you don't like your wife.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, huh. He goes, you need to just establish how much you are crazy about her and you love her.
Yeah.
And that blew my mind.
Oh, yeah. It's totally
true. And you're absolutely right.
And now I can do that material. I always start out by just being like, I adore him. I wouldn't change him. I love the person that he is. Like, I don't consider his autism a disability. I think he is the most amazing person.
Yeah.
Which is not bullshit. Like, my son is fucking amazing. And he has made me so patient and so kind, you know, and I really appreciate the fact that, like, I feel like he was born my kid for a reason. Like, I already had a lot of experience with autistic kids and with, like, troubled teens and troubled boys and stuff. And so I was already, like, really patient and ready for it. And he's just so fucking funny and amazing.
Yeah.
Like, I admire the fuck out of him. So when I do jokes about, like, the socially awkward shit that he says, it's because I love that shit.
Yeah.
Even though it's embarrassing in the moment and I'm always like, oh, God, I just fucking adore him. So I think that that's the difference. Like, there are a couple comedians I've heard who have autistic or special needs kids who the material they do is so mean-spirited. Like, it is really heartbreaking. And it feels like that, like... that they are very resentful. And I feel like when a crowd feels, in any subject, I feel like when a crowd feels that you're resentful, it's not funny.
Yeah.
Resentment is not funny. Resentment sucks, you know? So.
And I know I've heard you say in conversation about how that audience's reaction to that have been really positive.
Oh, people love it. And it means like the world to me that a lot of like almost every show, people who have autistic kids, parents of autistic children will come up and hug me and just be like, thank you so much for talking about this, for making it funny. Like, we've never heard our life. We've never heard our story.
Right.
Or like special needs teachers, you know, special education teachers will come and be like, thank you so much. That was so fun. And it was so fun to hear. Like, it's just exactly like that. And I do this on stage, but like, it's totally true. Autistic men will often come up to me and talk to me after, because I have a joke about how my kid has a huge penis.
Oh my God.
And how, like, that must be something with autism. And autistic men will come up and be like, I also have a huge dick.
But the social skills.
Yeah,
like,
and they don't mean it weird, but they're like, I totally can relate to what you said. Thank you for telling the world about my massive dick. And I'm always like, oh, thanks. Have a nice day.
And they're just coming from a genuine place.
Oh, yeah, they're not. I've been trying to tell people lately, like, I know that there are a lot of assholes online, and I know sometimes like people say shit or are obnoxious, but just treat everybody like they're autistic. Just have a little compassion. And like somebody, like I was realizing a lot of...
Well, you know, there are people and that you think they might be.
Yeah.
They say really silly things.
Just, well, like I have this thing every time I will post, like tweet anything. There's this one fan I have who will like mansplain what I just said to me. But then recently I realized that that's what my son does. Like if I'm like, oh, it's hot today. Well, actually it's 72 degrees, which is not hot. That's actually a very temperate temperature for it to be. And I'm like, okay, fine. It's not that hot. But that's what sometimes my male fans will do that. And so I've started to just be like, maybe they're autistic. Maybe they're not mansplaining this to me.
Yeah, that's all right.
And
yeah.
I'll just be like, oh, thanks for the information, sweetie.
Yeah.
Thank you for engage. Like, they're not trying to be shitheads. They're trying to engage in a conversation, but don't have the social skills to realize like, oh no, that's actually very rude to correct me just randomly like that. So I've just started to treat people like they're all autistic. That's my new online thing, is to have a little compassion. Be nice.
Hey guys. So that's the end of part one with Emma Arnold. We're going to get a little bit deeper next episode. If you read the description, you know what I'm talking about. But already Emma is a pretty fascinating person. Really excited to be friends with her and to be able to talk to her about her life. So we're going to dig into next week more about her past, dealing with sexual abuse, growing up, being abused, and how that affected her adulthood as a mother and a wife. And it gets really interesting and really deep. And not that her life is already interesting enough, raising 6 kids, 3 of her own, one of them special needs. She's a really fun-loving mom, and it's really cool to listen to her talk about that and have fun with it in life. But good times. Check out goodsandevil.com. You know, 10% off, code word grown up. Next week, part 2, Emma Arnold. Follow your heart.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
Hey guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy, thanks to Goldbelly. Goldbelly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world-famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Goldbelly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.